most important thing, it's problem market fit. That's the most, that everything comes down to problem market fit. Again, I've had tons of people come to me with issues raising money, closing sales, getting leads, getting new people on the web, whatever the issue is. And before I even see the product or I get their pitch deck, I already write back to them. I'm 99% sure it's problem market fit.
Beautiful people, welcome back to another episode of The Switch. And my name is still Ife Taiwo, obviously. And I also have another interesting guest on the episode today. Today we'll be speaking with Scott. Scott is your go-to guy if you have a startup, right? So for potential startupers like us, permit me for using that word, Scott, for potential startupers like us, I'm guessing you're the go-to guy for, you know, when we want to start our time, whenever we get stuck.
I try to be. I've helped quite a few companies over the years. I was a first hire at a early stage company about 10 and a half years ago. Helped build the company, succeeded at that, built the company. Built and scaled each team, pretty much everything within the organization. My personality is very much 0 to 1, so I love building things. Got into mentoring and coaching early stage startups. I've worked with over 1,000 companies over the last 10 years all over the world, in most verticals as well.
Mm. I mean, so for us, for you, right, why early startup, right? Why even startup at all, right? Because it's it's a lot of work. Right. You need to put the hours in, you need to put, is that because, you know, you had some experience in startup and say, look, I think this is the right place for me to go to?
I think originally when I first joined the startup, it was, I think, really for the opportunity to kind of come in the ground floor. I had worked at a number of other companies at that point. The first company I worked for was a global investment bank with, I don't know, maybe 50,000 people. And wow. I worked for two startups for that each had about maybe 200 to 350 people. And I really felt I wanted to kind of come in a lot earlier so I could have a bigger impact and have more of a say and be more involved in how the company grows and how the company operates. And there's obviously no opportunity like that as an early stage startup, really coming in at the ground floor and really being having the opportunity to build things. So I think that's what really attracted me to early stage companies. And kind of ever since, it's the same idea. Every decision a founder makes very early on can really make or break the company in the future. And really, I mean, it's what you do every day has a huge impact on whether you're in business the next day. So for me, it's super exciting. It's super challenging, but that's my passion. That's what I love to do.
So at what point did you decide that, look, I think I want to do this, you know, full time? And at what point was that switch for you, right? At what point did you say, look, I think I want to be able to advise guys who are going into this stuff full time as well, and, you know, help them to navigate the turns and the curveballs that, you know, that space throws at them?
It was probably about a year and a half into my experience helping build Envision, and it was really something that I just kind of did on the side. To this day, I've never had the desire to build a consultancy business. I just don't have the energy to do that. I don't have the drive to do that. But I naturally enjoy helping people. I've worked in nonprofits and I've done a lot of work. And just for me, like, my personality is very much of how can I help other people. And it was just like that exciting opportunity. You know, thankfully, about a year and a half into the growth of the company, you know, we were doing pretty well and growing. And there were companies that I would meet that were a year behind us and very interested to hear, like, what we did and what worked and what didn't work. And I said, hey, you know, I'm happy to share what I learned. I'm happy to share what I've experienced. I'm happy to share, you know, what we did, what worked, what didn't work. And if it's helpful to somebody else, hey, even better.
So your experience at Envision, I know you were part of the guys that, you know, core team that built Envision.
Yep.
I mean, I'd heard about Envision like 2-3 years ago. I think 2 years ago, yes. And I was like, I mean, it sounds like some platform that, especially for people. And I think I was doing some research about, you know, tools to use, especially for remote teams, and I stumbled on it. And I mean, 2 years down the line, I'm talking to one of the guys that built it.
Yep.
So what was that experience like? What was that, you know, all that stuff that you learned in terms of building, in terms of relationship management, in terms of team management, in terms of leadership for you?
Yeah, it was quite exciting and I'll call it scary at the same time. Prior to that, I had really focused my career on project management, product management, you know, account management, so some kind of relationship management. And as being a first hire and an operations person with an early stage company, you get to do everything. So when we were hiring people around, at least at that time, the US, we had to report state taxes and things like that. So someone had to deal with working with a state government agency. I had never done that. And it was, you know, for me, it was nerve-wracking to have to, you know, go and report things. I had never been in an HR role, but to be involved in hiring and more firing people, again, it was something that I haven't done. It was really an opportunity to learn a lot of areas about a business that I never had experience in, which obviously fundamental to building any company. And it was a challenge, but it was a great learning experience, and learned, you know, important things about, you know, building relationships with end users, with, you know, swag. I could do a whole doctoral thesis on the idea of swag and, you know, giving t-shirts and stickers and things like that through that experience of what we did in Vision and the successes that we've had there. So it was a lot of things of never having any experience in specific areas and saying, okay, no, this, we believe this can help, giving it a try, so making some mistakes, doing some things right, and really kind of taking out of it, okay, what have I learned? What we did do? What did we do right? What did we do wrong? How do we, you know, improve in the future? And then being able to take those experiences to other companies who, again, are maybe 6 months or 12 months behind us, or certainly now we were just trying to get off the ground. It was obviously a fantastic, you know, training ground to be able to see, what worked really well, what didn't work, why didn't it work, to be able to kind of share those lessons learned with other companies who are in a similar stage, who are maybe facing similar challenges or similar opportunities, and being able to give them experience from, obviously, from Envision and since, you know, 1,000 other companies, of just being able to share what we learned and what works and what doesn't work.
So you were at this stage, right? You said, look, I've learned all of this in Envision, and I think it's time to, you know, also do it on the side to be able to help people
who, yep,
are, you know, going through, you know, the startup phase. And one of the questions that I always ask people, especially startup, is what in God's name was going through your mind when you said, look, I think I want to be an entrepreneur or a startup founder? For you, right, what do you think? I mean, and you've spoken to, you know, hundreds of them. What exactly, and you obviously one as well, what goes through your mind and people's mind and say, look, I think I want to go? Because, I mean, I've tried it, and oh my gosh, it's a hell of a work. It's late nights, it's sleepless nights. It's really lot more stressful than your 9-to-5, because if you don't succeed, I mean, it's game over.
But of course.
Meanwhile, while you're 9-to-5, I mean, worst case scenario, you get the warning from HR, you start looking for a new gig, right?
Yep.
So what exactly is it that, especially, I mean, you can talk about yourself and also, you know, people you've spoken to as well.
Sure. For me, I think it was the idea of trying to solve some problem. I launched a side project called Spontaneously about 9 or so months ago. Mm-hmm. Coming from experience I've had, so Envision was one of the first all remote companies, was a life-changing experience for me to go remote when remote wasn't cool, and still bad, still trying to argue with that point now. But saved myself 70-80 minutes of a commute each way. My quality of life got so much better. I'm very much of an extrovert. I love talking to people. I love meeting people. So every day at the office, once or twice a day would go with a friend or colleague to Starbucks. Every hour would get up from my desk, go wander over to somebody, have a conversation at their desk, at the water cooler. And when I went remote, though, these opportunities just weren't there, because without that physical space, people weren't there to kind of have these coffee moments. But the idea of remote is, you know, you need to redesign that experience for the remote environment. So I did that at Envision, and I would just, you know, kind of close my eyes, scroll through a list of who's online in Slack, you know, send them a message, hey, I'm Scott, I'm in Israel, would love to have a conversation. And people absolutely loved it. Like, they loved that spontaneity. They loved having kind of a conversation that wasn't about work. Because, again, I will try not to rant too much about meetings and video in the remote place, but people just love that opportunity to meet somebody new, have a short conversation, again, just like they did in the office, the water cooler, or the coffee machine.
Yeah.
So this is something, a challenge that I had. I solved it myself. And when the pandemic hit, you know, this was the biggest thing that I heard for 2 years, where companies were, even ones that were happy with remote and loving remote, everyone consistently said, hey, we miss these serendipitous moments, these little bump-ins in the hallway or the coffee machine. A short conversation, how's it going, how was your weekend, you watch the game, whatever it may be, and then kind of go on with your day. So I said, okay, I've had this challenge. I understand it's clearly a challenge, so I feel like I want to try and solve it. So I think for me, and many entrepreneurs are the same way, they experience some pain point, some issue, whatever it may be, and say, hey, there has to be a way to solve this. No, probably the best example within the last good 15 years is Uber. I lived in Manhattan for 4 years. Getting a taxi in Midtown Manhattan during rush hour or anywhere in the city on a Friday, Saturday night, forget it. You know, like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. We all had our strategies of walking to this block and because it goes this way and that way. It was a nightmare. And then somebody had the idea of, well, you know what? In a city, San Francisco, New York, getting a taxi during certain hours, walking to find a taxi is a miserable experience. How do we try to solve that? Let's just flip that kind of idea on its head. Instead of you going to find a taxi, you press one button and a taxi comes to you. So I think it's that idea of problem market fit, where there's a problem, I'm having it, people I know are having it, and let's try and see if we can solve it. So I think there's definitely entrepreneurs that fall into this side. And I think any company that's going to have any chance has to have problem market fit. I don't believe in the idea of product market fit. The world does not need any more products. The world needs solutions to problems. So I'm very much of the idea of problem market fit. And then you have other entrepreneurs who have this big dream. They see other successful companies that are having exits for hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars, and maybe something similar, to the United States in the mid-1800s, the gold rush. They heard people in California were striking gold and becoming wealthy beyond wealthy, and just people had the desire. Did they care about gold? Did they know anything about mining? No, they just had that interest and desire to be rich as well. So there's people, I think, that definitely have all different types of reasons to build things. But I certainly feel those ones who are really trying to solve a problem are the ones who are going to be more successful.
So I'm going to digress a bit, right? And you just said something quite interesting, something I've always believed in, right? And it's that we have too many products, right? And we have too many apps on the Play Store, on the Apple Store. So sometimes it gets overwhelming, right? I mean, what's your take? I mean, seeing that you've also worked with people who build this stuff. I mean, do you get to say, at that point, you say, look, this product you're building, it already exists, right? Why not just fine-tune it or make it better, or whatever the case may be?
So again, I think it really comes to that idea of problem market fit, and I'll try to give an example, which may be more US focused. I'm not sure where your community is based, but there was a company, a Chrome plugin that was very popular in the US in the last number of years called Honey.
And yeah, I know about Honey. I use it on Amazon a few times to get discounts and stuff.
Exactly. So historically, if you wanted to save money and e-commerce, you would go to one of 1,000 websites, coupons.com or Retail Me Not, what have you, and you'd search, hey, I'm looking to purchase a pair of Nike sneakers. So I would search for Nike coupons, and it would give me maybe back 15 potential coupons, which would either be this coupon has been successfully used 75% of the time, or it was last used, 2 hours ago.
And so then it just doesn't work.
Exactly. Most of the time they didn't work. And you'd either have to copy the affiliate link or some kind of, coupon code, and then paste it into the Nike coupon, the shopping cart, or you'd click a button to open up an affiliate link to then go. So you have to try 15 times just to see if any of the coupons work, which, as you said, most of them didn't. And if they did, maybe which one gives you most. And all of a sudden, Honey comes along. They don't have any better technology. They don't find any more coupons than anyone else did.
Just
all they do is solve a customer experience issue, a pain point, where, as we said, saving money was painful. It was a painful experience.
Yeah,
so you get to the shopping cart, you press one button, and Honey tries every one of those coupon codes for you to tell you, yes, they work, they don't work. If they do work, which one saves you more money? Can you bundle the coupons? Just to save you that tough experience. And just by solving that frustrating experience, PayPal bought them for $3 or $4 billion.
Oh, wow.
Maybe 5 years ago. So you don't know, there's lots of arguments of, you need to be the first in the market. Most of the times, the first in the market don't win the race anyway.
Very true.
But even if the market is crowded or somewhat crowded, it's finding, is there some pain point, or is there something lacking within these tools that's a great bit of frustration for users who are using it? And if there are, solve that one specific issue. That's the MVP. It's okay if there's other tools, there's products. There's always going to be. I try to tell the founders that if they build something, if there's no competitors in their market within 6 months, then they're in the wrong space. Because if you do something right, then people are going to get in there because it's so easy. I mean, these days, you don't need any coding skills. You don't need any servers. Like, you can just build something on no code, host it on some,
some cloud
site.
Yeah.
And
you're good to go. Yeah.
Exactly. So where it may have been quite difficult, or you needed to hire a developer or a co-founder and a lot of extra work, now it's like I can build a prototype with no coding experience in like a day or two, launch it, see if it works, and if it does, great. Okay, maybe down the road I'll hire a developer or a co-founder. The fact that it's so easy, to launch these companies really means, again, it's so important to focus on that problem. You really need to solve a problem, in a specifically painful problem. Again, it could be the B2C space, individuals, it could be in the workplace, doesn't really matter. And again, you have the right market that you're now trying to go after. And if you do,
exactly.
Again, you could be Honey. I'm gonna build a Chrome plugin. It's not gonna find any more coupons than anyone else. It's not gonna have any better technology than anyone else. No, getting away from this idea where, you have to be 10x better or 100x better. No, you don't. You just need to solve some friction and pain point that isn't being solved now. And then you could be the next Honey and be worth $4 billion.
Yeah. I mean, so speaking about the 10x, right? 10x in what exactly, whatever, the other, competition is doing. And I think therein usually lies most of the problem, right? In the sense that, and I'm sure you probably had this experience with founders as well. There's a lot of analysis paralysis that goes on, in the co-founder, in the tech, especially in the tech space, and especially with co-founders and entrepreneurs. They just want to get it right, right? Yep. They want it to be perfect at once. But I mean, from experience, we know that it can be perfect at once. It would never be perfect at once. And while you're waiting for it to be perfect at once, somebody else has the same idea. Because like I always say, ideas are a dime a dozen, right?
Correct.
Someone just picks it up and then just implements, right? So, I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think it's, I believe it was Sheryl Sandberg who was famous for saying, done is better than finished. What is it? Done is better than perfect. I totally agree. I do believe in many, many cases that UI UX is I'd probably say like the number two differentiator and differentiator factor within a company. Like if you have poor UI UX, unless there's no one else in the market who's solving this issue, and it's a really painful issue, and it's probably maybe like a very old industry that they're, you know, all the other tools look like they're, you know, Windows 95. If it's not that case, then UI UX has to be great from the start. Yeah. There is no such thing as perfect. If you try to be perfect, you're going to definitely, you know, fall behind, because nothing's ever going to be perfect, and you just wait to get something out. Again, the idea is iteration, right? It's best really with the MVP. You know, you find that one problem, you solve that one problem simply. Solve, again, get people, press a button and get the car to come to you. Okay, wonderful, solve that challenge. Okay, what could we do next? Maybe now it's planning ahead. So instead of me wandering around the streets of New York City, I need a taxi right now. I know, okay, at 5:30, I'm going to need a taxi. Let me order it there. Or whatever it may be, you know, keep iterating. So solve one problem very simply, and then keep building out on that. So again, it doesn't need to be this entire platform from day one. I'm very against that. I always try to reiterate the idea of, you know, MVP, and M means minimal. So build as little as you possibly can. Again, that solves that specific issue. And just launch something. Again, get it out there, solve a problem, get that feedback, you know, get that value proposition, and then grow from there.
I mean, people just want to know that it works, right? I just want to know that what you built works for me, even if it's to the barest minimum. If it's just for, I mean, you can then continue, just like you said, continue to tinker and iterate until, you know, it becomes whatever vision or whatever, you know, idealistic picture that you have at the back of your head when you were creating the picture. I mean, so speaking of building now, right? My next question now is around teams. Mm-hmm. And I know you're a big fan of remote working, right?
Yeah.
And one of the questions I always ask is, as a startup, right, when is the best time for you to go fully remote? Should I start out with hybrid? Should I start out fully remote? Should I just go for the juggler and say, look, everybody's working fully remote from everywhere in the world, wherever I can find the best talent?
Yep. So absolutely, from day one, not only should a company be fully remote, but they should be asynchronous by default. So it's interesting, this whole idea with hybrid. I would say if you put out a poll, it doesn't matter how many people you poll, and you ask them, if you were launching a company today or tomorrow, would you be fully remote? Would you be hybrid, or would you be fully in the office? I'm overwhelmingly confident you would get almost zero votes for being hybrid, because how does it possibly make sense that we're going to build a company, build culture, build engagements, operations, all these things for some people who are in an office and some people who are not? Absolutely not. No, hybrid was doomed to fail from the beginning. I believe there is one opportunity for hybrid, and that is, number one, there's no more central headquarters. So the idea of a single office in the center of town where everyone commutes from outside of that is dead. That will be replaced with more very local kind of spaces, and there's all different kind of areas.
Communities will be able to, and stuff.
Exactly. People will be able to work much closer to them, and then maybe people work together, so on and so forth. And that workspace or subscription is a benefit, just like unlimited vacation, just like Kindle books, what have you. Here's a space or a bunch of spaces to use if you want to use it, why you want to use it, when you want to use it, how you want to use it. If you want to use it, great. If you don't want to use it, that's great too. So for me, this is where hybrid will end up in a number of years. Some companies are, the more forward-thinking companies are already there, and the rest of the companies will eventually get there. But outside of those companies, again, none of these are companies that are starting today. These are all companies who have mostly pivoted during COVID. So if you're launching a company today, absolutely be a remote first company and async by default. It's quite interesting. Even before the pandemic, probably about within the 6 months of the pandemic hitting, a lot of remote companies that I had seen that had come my way were coming out of either Paris or Berlin. So I started reaching out to the founders and having a lot of conversations with these founders. And the story was exactly the same. We understand in Paris, or Berlin, or wherever you may be, that we're not taking people to Mars, we're not curing cancer. So at least at that point, we knew we couldn't compete against Facebook, we couldn't compete against Google. So yeah. We understood from day one, we had to be remote first in order to hire the best possible people. And that was it. And they hired remotely from day one, knowing, again, you're just not getting anybody in Paris or Berlin because, again, if you're not curing cancer, you're not getting people to or one of the big guys, you just weren't able to get that talent. And these companies have done extraordinarily well. A lot of these companies have been asynchronous by default, which was interesting for me to learn. I've hosted a number of these companies on my podcast, especially on the topic of async. Async is the future of remote.
I
would say, of all work, whether office or not office. The idea of people sitting in a conference room or a Zoom call for 30 or 60 minutes, listening to one person read word for word for word from a presentation is just old, antiquated. There's no reason to do this. You know, async is going to solve so many problems. So yes, absolutely. You're launching a company today, remote first, async by default. No questions.
So now that we're on the topic of remote teams, is it difficult for companies who are not fully remote to hire talent these days? I mean, because I have had of a few guys say, look, if it's not fully remote, I'm not going to, plug in into whatever it is that you're selling, right? And especially when it comes to, tech teams and developers and engineers, it's become some sort of the norm to say, look, I'm far away. So take, for example, I have a few friends who work from here, Lagos, Nigeria, to companies in Germany, in Europe, in Amsterdam, especially in Europe. The US is a bit tricky because of the time difference.
Sure.
Right? Yeah, but Europe is still a bit, it's just 1 hour max, is 2 hours.
Yep.
Is it going to be difficult for, companies to attract the talent that they really want if they are not doing fully remote?
Absolutely. If you think about it, you go back a couple of years, companies in Lagos or Berlin or New York or San Francisco had to fight and compete for people who lived in Lagos, right?
Yeah.
Again, unless you were the Google or the Facebook or the company that's getting people to Mars, regardless of what location you were in, you were in second place. You're already struggling to compete against these big companies who could pay, twice or three times as much as you could. Mm-hmm. But in theory, right, is this company based in Lagos or where have you, there was only that competition within Lagos, right? So the people who were the great developer in Lagos, well, okay, maybe there's 20 companies or 100 companies. So there isn't very many companies out there that you could possibly work with. So you kind of, the companies had the upper hand in those opportunities because, like, hey, I can kind of dictate how much you get paid and the salary and the kind of, because you really don't have anywhere else or too many other places to go. But now on top of those companies having to compete within the same city in the same country, now they have to compete globally because now any other company in the entire world can come and get them versus, again, it was just some company that was in the same city. So I think absolutely it will be far more difficult for most companies to hire people unless they're fully remote. There will always be people who feel more comfortable or more productive or whatever the scenario is working from some type of office space, and that's fine. And you'll always have companies that's their culture. Arguments and the hate that Elon Musk got a couple of weeks ago when he said that everyone needs to go back in the office.
Back to the office, yeah.
Okay. No, that's their culture. That's the way that he wants to run his business. And I could argue all day that, okay, the people who are working on the physical rocket or the physical car, they obviously have to be in the office, but the people who are building software for it don't need to be. But there are people that want and would prefer to work in an office, and that's fine. And they can go to those companies, but they're going to be very few and far between. And most companies, again, will... I mean, to be honest, like, remote's not even something you can really offer anymore to be a differentiator. Pre-pandemic, if it was like I mean, for me, that, I mean, that's how I remember I was living. I think I spoke about this before. I was, you know, commuting 70 to 80 minutes each way. I was living in Long Island, New York at the time. I was commuting into downtown Manhattan. And I saw a job post, and it was like, blah, blah, blah. And at the bottom, it said, work from home. And I'm like, wow. Bingo, I need to be doing this. So all those years, that opportunity of saying, work from home, like, that was the best opportunity you could get to differentiate yourself from another company.
Yeah.
And get great people that wanted to work from home. But now those days are over, because now everyone pretty much has to offer that, except, you know, for some smaller companies.
Yeah, it's no longer a peck.
Yeah, so now it's okay, what are the next things that we need to offer? And a lot of those things are coming around asynchronous communication, or coming around 4-day work week. A lot of these different pieces, companies are having to think, okay, what's the next thing? Because we can't just say, oh, we'll hire remotely. Fantastic. So is the rest of the world. Now, what else are you going to offer now that's going to entice me to come work for you versus all the other 100,000 companies that are hiring remotely now?
Interesting. So still on the issue of remote, right?
Yeah.
As and, you know, I'm a project manager and I handle projects from day to day, and especially in the finance and tech space. So how do I, and I'm sure there are quite a handful of people like myself who, you know, and I tend to have people who are doing remote and engineers who are remote working with me and trying to deliver projects on a day-to-day basis. How do I, or how do, you know, leaders out there now manage? I mean, everybody's, especially with the different time zones and all of that stuff, how, you know, what's the most efficient way to handle, you know, conflicts? What's the most efficient way to handle remote teams so that they deliver optimal value to what is needed in the firm?
Yeah. So the first thing, and something that I've been saying for, I don't know, a whole long time, it's productivity is really a simple math equation. You have a specific deliverable, right? Launch, build this feature, answer 25 support tickets, launch this blog post, whatever the deliverable is, and do it by Wednesday, 12 p.m. local time. So you know exactly what you need to do. You need to know it. You know exactly when you need to do it by. And that's it. It's as simple as that. And many companies still haven't figured that out, right? Because work used to be based on perception. I saw you in an office, you know, your hands typing away on the keyboard. And I thought, wow, no, you're a superstar. No, I didn't realize that you were typing away on Facebook or YouTube or doing whatever you were. The fact that you were there and you would maybe come in early, you were staying a little bit late, I thought, wow, you're like the best employee in the world because I see you and it looks like you're being productive, but you're obviously not. And there's plenty of research now that, you know, says how much work that an average employee does a day. And depending on the country, it's as low as an hour and a half out of 8 hours. Probably the highest is about 4 hours out of the eight. So most of the work day is not doing work. So if we understand that perception isn't really how you can measure productivity, well, then you need the new formula of, okay, what are you actually producing? You know, the contribution. What are you actually doing or building or answering or what have you within the specific time frame? So the number one thing, obviously, you know, leaders have to have trust. Now, that's the single foundation.
Yeah, true.
The bedrock of all remote is trust. Once we move beyond that, it's, hey, as a leader, I need to clearly define the literal thing that the project or the task that you need to do. And I need to clearly define when I need it by. And if I could do those, okay, then we have a conversation. I give it to you. Do you have any questions? Is there any confusion? If not, go run with it. And so in this way, I don't need an hourly checkup. I don't need an end of day checkup. I don't need a next morning checkup. I don't need all these kind of nonsense things that have been happening. You know when you need to produce it by. I know when you need to produce it by.
And that's the end.
And, you know, again, what you could do is use like an asynchronous, you know, daily stand-up, like many companies do.
Yeah.
Like the standard, you know, what did you do yesterday? What are you working on today?
What are the issues? Yeah.
Exactly. So in the next morning, if you're running into some obstacle, you can just post that in Slack. Hey, I'm trying to do this, but I'm running into this issue, or I'm waiting for this person to provide. And so I, as your leader, first thing in the morning, I clearly understand, okay, here's what you achieved yesterday. Here's what you're looking to achieve today, but you have a blocker. So I need to come in and remove that blocker. And truly, it's as simple as that.
So, I mean, you spoke about stand-ups, and especially that. What I do on a day-to-day basis is, you know, and I say, look, guys, let's have a daily stand-up. So when I took over, you know, my current team, they were not doing all of that. They just had people say, look, there's a project that needs to be done. Let's get it done. And, you know, there are always squabbles along the way. And so because there is no metric, right, or there is, because there is no timeline to deliver a certain product or a certain deliverable, it becomes difficult. So when senior management is saying, look, where have we gotten to, the former person was saying, how do I get this done? Or what, these are the issues that I'm facing. But management just wants results, right? Like every organization does. So what I did in my own case was, you know, we started doing agile, started doing 2-week sprints, started doing 1-week sprints. So that way, you know, there was constant communication and there was constant feedback. So we brought in Slack, we started using Jira, and it became, I mean, it's not perfect, right? But it became better. And I found out that if you don't measure, like famous saying, if you can't measure it, you can't control it. You need to be able to measure and then put a metric to whatever it is that your team is doing, especially if they are remote, right? It becomes trickier if they are remote. And just like you said, because you're in the office doesn't mean that you're working. You could be on TikTok, or you could be on LinkedIn trying to get another job. the list goes on. I'm just going to take you back to startups, and we'll probably just round off with this, right? In your experience working with startup founders, what has been, you know, the common ground or the common one, that common thing that you found among startup founders that holds them back in becoming better startup founders?
That's a good question. One thing I definitely see commonly is, I think, a misconception that as a CEO that you need to do everything, right? You need to be the, like in America, they call it the jack of all trades, right? You have to be able to do everything. Where that's the farthest from the case. You know, as a founder, and what I try to tell, you know, all the CEOs I work with, understand what you're good at, understand what you're not good at, understand what you're passionate about and what you're not passionate about. And any of those things that you're not passionate about, or certainly that you're not good at, outsource those things as quickly as you possibly can. Because I've seen so many cases where a founder is trying to build a marketing campaign and an onboarding and this and that and the other, and they have absolutely no idea what they're doing. And many of these times I'll come in to the company, you know, trying to help them with growth statistics or whatever it is, and say, okay, you know, you need to be doing the onboarding process and onboarding mails for all these reasons. And they're like, yeah, great, and I'm going to do that. And they kind of say, okay, I'll take it from here. Because again, that misconception that they have to be the ones that own that, or whatever is that lack of confidence, or they're thinking, okay, their board or their investors are expecting them to do it. And they try to go run with it, and they fail almost every single time. So again, they don't know what they're doing. And you know, one of the common, especially issues and mistakes that's made, it's, okay, we launched this Facebook ads, right? Okay, we're going to get 100 new users to the website for these Facebook ads. And you launch it, and 2 days later, you're only getting like 5 or 8 or 10. I'm gonna change it. Like, I'm gonna try this. And I'm gonna try that. And every 2 days, you change to something else. Where you really understand, okay, you need to give time. Right?
Yeah,
because you're doing an ad doesn't mean 2 days later you're gonna get the 100 people on your site that you expect. It's going to take time.
Yeah.
But founders don't realize that they believe, okay, there should be like these
instant results. Yeah.
Exactly. So they go and they try this and they try that, and they end up spending months and months spinning their wheels and ending up nowhere. Mm. Where what they should have done is hire a Facebook ad guru or someone who is, you know, very experienced in that, and they would have in the end saved more money and had more success by hiring that person up front than wasting 6 months of dollars and wasted time. So I think that's the biggest issue that I've seen. Another issue that I've seen is I see a lot of, I will never tell a founder, no, their idea is not going to work. In many cases, I'm as soon as I hear about the product, I'm like 99% sure there's no chance. But I don't have prophecy, at least as of yet, so I don't try to play God. So we never know how things are going to work. But
yeah,
I try to,
you never can tell, right?
So I try to say, okay, from what you're doing or what your plan is, you're going to guarantee run into these obstacles and these issues at some point in your journey. So you need to have a plan today how to solve those or get around those, because every one of these will kill your business and will kill your product and your company. So you need to have a strategy and a solution to these items now. And a common thing that I hear, I'll pull it more towards on, like, especially technical founders who are the ones who build it. Well, I've just spent the last 6 months like building this, and they don't want to feel like, hey, I just wasted 6 months of my time.
Yeah,
so I'm
going to
kind of keep going with what I've done, where in reality, again, there's almost no chance you're going to succeed. It's better to really understand, okay, it's better today to pivot onto something else or maybe a better track. And I won't call it 6 months of waste. Again, it's a learning opportunity, but it's better to get on the right road after 6 months of time versus spend another 6 months going down the wrong road and then end up going nowhere, which, again, somebody told you 6 months earlier. I think those are the two biggest issues that I see.
Thank you very much, Scott. I mean, thank you for jumping on this episode with me. It's been an insightful conversation with remote teams, with startups, how to manage remote teams and being able to navigate, especially if you're a startup founder. I'm going to assume, obviously, that there are going to be... So what do you have to say to... just basically last words to startup founders just about starting out. What's your one advice that you would give them right now?
The first thing I would say, and the most important thing, it's problem market fit. Everything comes down to problem market fit. Again, I've had tons of people come to me with issues raising money, closing sales, getting leads, getting new people on the web, whatever the issue is. And before I even see the product or I get their pitch deck, I already write back to them. I'm 99% sure it's problem market fit. And they write back, no, I've spoken to these 25 people or 50 friends or what have you, and they all said it's a great idea. So, okay, now send me what you want. They send me their information, and I said, okay, I've gone from 99 to 99.9% sure the issue is problem market fit. Because if you're not solving a problem, an investor is not going to give you money. If you're not solving a problem that people have, people aren't going to try the product, especially that there's probably 50 other products of the same exact thing that's out there. If you're not solving a core problem that, okay, maybe people will try you, but if there's 50 other problems that are out there that are doing the same thing, why are they gonna sign up for you and pay you versus pay the other 50 people? So the core thing is don't do anything, don't raise money, don't build anything, don't even write a line of code until you've checked off that box for problem market fit. You found a specific problem that's painful to a specific group of people, and it's the right market, and start there. Because again, everything, especially early on, is all dependent on problem market fit. If you don't have it, I don't care how much money you raise, I don't care how many leads that you get from the site, it's just not going to work.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Scott. It's been interesting and amazing talking to you. Thank you for jumping on this episode with me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and hopefully share some knowledge with your community. And certainly if I can be helpful to your community, everyone can feel free to be in touch.
Just finally, if someone wanted to reach you, what's the best place and how's the, to get to reach you?
Yeah, probably the best way is through LinkedIn. So everyone feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. I always do appreciate, and I'm a big believer in including a note. So especially people, that's what I try to practice. Anyone that I don't know personally, I include a note of why I'm trying to connect with them. Because unfortunately, too many people are trying to do sales these days through LinkedIn, and it actually drives me nuts.
I get a lot of that.
Exactly. So I'm happy to connect with everybody. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Drop a note that you heard the podcast here and what I may be able to help with, if anything, or you just want to connect. That's probably the best place to get a hold of me.
Thank you very much, Scott. It's been amazing. Do enjoy the rest of the game.
You too. I appreciate it. Thank you.
So that's it, guys. It was good speaking to Scott today on the Switch. And you've heard him. If you want to reach out, you can reach out. I'll put his profile, his LinkedIn profile in the episode notes, so you can just click on it and reach out to him. So that's it, guys. Thank you for jumping on the Switch, and do enjoy the rest of the evening. Thank you.